there, it's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. Hello, it's Tracy Tully here from Tracy Tully Talks, and you're in our studio today with the beautiful Taryn Clare, and we are booming out to you across the world from Townsville, very hot and sunny Townsville, which is in North Queensland. I'd like to introduce our guest today, Taryn. I've known Taryn for a while, and Taryn is a survivor and a thriver of breast cancer. She's a mother of three, and her husband, whom she refers to as her beloved, is a doctor. So I'd like you to hear all about Taryn's story today. How are you, Taryn? Welcome.
Hi, Tracy. Thank you so much for having me here on your show. It's quite a privilege, and hello to all of you in the US of A.
Okay, then. So I hope everyone's faring well. Here where we are, it's very, very warm and it's very humid. Behind me in Townsville is Castle Hill, and it's a special place. I've come back here after many decades away. This is my stomping grounds, old stomping grounds, when I went through university. So it's got some great memories, some wild memories, as we do when we go to university. And our watering hole is called the Vale, the Bull's Britches. So there you go. I'm going to go back there this weekend.
A familiar old haunting ground for many JCU graduates.
Yeah. Okay, I'd like you to start with your story, if you could. If you could tell our listeners about the beginning when you were in Africa.
Thanks, Tracy. I originally came from Africa. I was born in Durban and we immigrated to Australia when I was 17. So I actually went to the same university as Tracy. And when I took my children over to Africa to visit my grandparents, my son was 3 years old. And at that stage, I had didn't really believe in anything afterlife or any weird stuff, what we call woo-woo. And I sat on my grandmother's bed and my son was three and the other son was two. And I said, you know, I don't believe in any of the after stuff, but you're the closest person I know to dying. So could you possibly, when you die, can we make a deal that you'll come back and you'll let me know if there's anything else afterwards? So blow me down 6 months later, It was Christmas Day. And my son had been given a swing set and waited, you know, as boys do, they're really gregarious and fun loving, and they wait for the swing to get to the highest point before jumping off. And then he, you know, proceeded to pretend to fly, and he had a little bit of a fall and a little grizzle, and he came inside and, you know, went to the toilet, and he was peeing pure viscous blood. And my beloved, who is a GP, said to me, look, it's Christmas Day and Boxing Day. We're not going to have a lot of specialists up at the hospital, so we'll sit for hours and it'll ruin Christmas for these little ones. If it is a ruptured kidney like I think it is, we can hang on for 2 days and just let the children enjoy the fun. So that afternoon, we then hear and get word from Africa that my grandmother has passed away on the exact same day.
Oh, wow.
So it was a day of huge tragedy in one sense and trauma. And it didn't take very long then, 2 days later, to do testing and to then discover that my 3.5-year-old by then had a Wilms tumor, which is a childhood kidney cancer. So his tiny little kidney had a tumor the size of 11 by 7 centimeters, which is extraordinarily large for a little one. And so we dropped everything and we went down to Sydney, where we went and saw a surgeon, and he started his chemotherapy and he had his kidney removed. And, you know, blow me down, strange things started happening while we were down there. Do you want to hear more about the strange things?
I do. As I said to Taryn, I'm not a woo-woo person, and that's what we refer to, you know, the magical and mystic worlds of spirits and crystals, etc. For me, as you, listeners would know, I'm a bush girl, and it's pretty pragmatic and open and shut, and a spade's a spade, not a bloody shovel for me. But I'm always open to listening, always open to listening. And when I spoke to Taryn last year about her story, it intrigued me no end. So, yes, I think we should share your story with our listeners.
Fabulous, because, you know, having a beloved who is a general practitioner, he is a man of science. And so he does sit on that end of the spectrum. And I did a business degree. So, you know, that wasn't my world to live in this unusual place where we experience things from a different perspective and angle. But, you know, I, you know, was dealing with the grief and the shock and the trauma of a really beloved grandmother passing away unexpectedly in my perspective. And also dealing then with my son's diagnosis, which was really harrowing and really difficult to process as the mum of a small child to suddenly believe that he could be snatched so soon. And little odd things started happening. So I wasn't processing the grief.
Yeah.
And there was a lady, a girlfriend of mine in town, so rang up and she said, Taryn, I've got someone who can talk to you about what happens to a soul when they pass. And this was something that I really was concerned that my grandmother would have been in pain or agony when she passed. What actually happened to someone when they moved on from this world? Mm. And so she suggested that I call this other lady in Brisbane and have a conversation with her. And I looked at the time and I said, don't be ridiculous. It's 9 o'clock at night. We don't make phone calls after 8 o'clock at night. You know, growing up in South Africa, we had some pretty strict, you know, rules of what was the correct way to behave. And she said, well, actually, it'd be more rude if you don't ring because she's sitting and waiting and she'll have a very late night waiting for you to call if you're not going to call. So when I rang her, she was sitting on the other side and she started to explain to me what happens to a soul. And I was telling her the story of making this deal with my grandmother. And as I was talking to her, Toy Story had just come out at the cinemas and Toy Story had these cute little racing car, little green racing car. And I'm talking to her sitting on the couch and this little green racing car starts making a beeline across the floor. It's now 10 o'clock at night, across the floor to my feet. And, you know, you can imagine it's dark and there's a lamp on and I am just, the heart is pounding. The tears start, the histrionics actually, I pick my feet up and I tucked underneath my bottom, you know, on the couch sort of
escaping.
And, you know, beloved walks in. Actually, she keeps talking and every time I say my grandmother, the car moves back and forth like a yes. And beloved walks in and looks at this little car on the floor, terrorizing me. And he says to me, don't be bloody ridiculous, just pack it away. You know, ever pragmatic, you know, stop staring at it and crying that it's terrorizing. You do something about it. Yeah. And so he packed it away. And that night I said to him, but I do believe that that was my grandmother coming through and letting me know that she was there to support me. And he laughed. And he explained to me that it could be someone with a remote control on a garage door and pressed the button up and closed and up and closed. So, you know, I went to bed that night, you know, questioning exactly how things work and whether his truth was my truth, whether my truth was real or not, or whether I was in a state of delusion because I was so emotional about these two tragedies. So the next day, my mother was actually in South Africa and it is 8 hours behind. And so I've woken and it is 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's midnight in South Africa. And I thought to myself, this is going back a while when we didn't have these fancy mobile phones and we certainly didn't have the internet where I could look up new country codes to understand how I was going to, you know, send a message to a different country. And so I said to my grandmother out loud, you know, I'd like to send my mum a message. And it would be really great if you can get my mum to send me a message first, because on this big brick of a Motorola phone, I can then just click reply and I don't need to know the country code. And, you know, in that moment, the phone buzzed in my hand. Now, considering it's midnight in South Africa, my mum used to retire to bed early at about 9 o'clock. You know, her being awake at midnight was, you know, quite a feat. So the phone buzzes in my hand and I get a fright and I drop it on the floor. Luckily, it was a brick.
Yeah,
yes.
They were big.
And my beloved walks through and he sees the phone on the kitchen floor vibrating. And he picks it up and he says, "What are you crying about?" Picks it up. It's your mum in Africa.
Oh.
So, of course, that had more tears. And I just needed, you know, to let my mum know I thought that my grandmother was touching base. And so that really started my journey into this space and dimension of kind of being immersed in understanding what it felt like to begin to understand that there might be something more or beyond what we can see.
Yeah.
And so many other things started happening from that space, and I have become better at, you know, understanding that world. And it really began the journey to what I am today. My son, incidentally, is 21 now and perfectly well. So we have had a wonderful outcome and very grateful for that. So, but there's plenty more stories. I'm just not sure whether you want to go down that path or you want to try something different.
Oh, I love it. Go down the rabbit hole, I think. And it is important, I suppose, for someone like myself, and your husband, your beloved, you know, and my father's a doctor too. So we were brought up with science. And so it's very hard when you're brought up with science to think in any other way. But obviously there's things that happen in our lives and you might dismiss them at first and then they continue and you know that there's absolutely no way you rule out every possibility of something causing it. And I know I used to live up in what's called the Gulf of Carpentaria. This is a very, very remote area in Queensland, right up at the very top there as it goes into the sea. And I used to do big, long trips from home up there on my own, and they were very long trips and I'd always be driving at night. You'd end up. And there was what we call a min min light in Australia. And my father, who is a flying doctor, said to me, "You'll see some min min lights." And he said, "Whatever you do, don't get out of your car and don't drive towards them." He said, "Just be relaxed and keep driving. Don't worry about them. And they may stay with you for hours and hours and hours." And I looked at him and I thought, "For real, Dad? This is not like you at all." And he wasn't laughing. And this is a guy, you know, he's very learned man, and he's seen everything that could be to see. He was in the Second World War. He was in the Malayan campaign. And so I believed him. I believed him. And I didn't see a min min light at first in my first trip. But over the years that I was up in the Gulf driving back and forth, I did eventually see a min min light. And when I first saw it, all I saw was a reflection in the cabin of the car. And in those days, I didn't have a lot of lights in the cabin of the car. They're pretty basic, no air conditioning, anything like that. And then I saw this light. And I was kept looking at it on the dash and thinking, where's that come from? There's just nothing around me. And it wasn't till I'd driven an hour that it didn't shift. And when I looked outside to my left-hand side, to the what would have been the horizon, there was a min min light. And it was a min min light. And I drove for hours and that light stayed with me for hours. I don't know what it is. No one knows what it is. People have been lost by driving towards it. But nothing happened to me. My car didn't break down. No one hurt me. Didn't run out of fuel. And I didn't feel scared at all. So there is a sense of something. Tell us about some of your
Tracy, I love that story. And thank you for sharing, because, you know, being around people who are scientifically based, it does make you want to question whether you're actually sane. And, you know, I did question towards, we stayed in Sydney for 3 months doing treatment, and I was incredibly eager to get home and get back to my state of normal being. And when I arrived home, we went and had coffee with a girlfriend. Now, in Townsville, it's very hot and we, you know, have unusual weather and sometimes, you know, a little bit of flooding with cyclones and things like that. So we have these little homes built on almost stilts. And so a lot of the townsfolk people, it keeps your home cool because the breeze can blow beautifully underneath the house and cool down from the floorboards. But a lot of people come and use that space. So we were sitting underneath a friend's home on a Sunday morning. She's French. So we were drinking black coffee and eating French baguettes. And she said to me, you know, Taryn, how are you going? And I said, you know what? I think I lost it for a while. I feel like I became a little bit emotionally disturbed and I started seeing and believing things that weren't true. And she said, well, for example, what? So I started to tell the story of sitting on that couch and sitting on the couch and in that moment, you know, having this expression of this car moving towards me. And as I start telling the story, no lie, Tracy, she was present, her husband was present, my beloved was beside me. Her children's fire truck, which was about 50 centimetres long, started to make the distance and move the entire length of the house on that concrete floor. It came up to my feet. And as I would say, Gran, the ladder would start to go up and down. Now, my beloved stood up and there were a few expletives and he went upstairs. He was not willing to sit and be present in that moment because it did not form part of his world or his conscious thought or his conscious understanding of what was happening. But having witnesses this time and having the exact same event repeat itself made me feel a little bit more secure in the knowing that this was actually not part of an emotional delusion or how, you know, trauma might manifest. And so it was actually an important moment for me to move forward and then start to understand that there is more to this world than what meets the eye. So further on down the track, what I soon discovered is I was concerned at one stage that I might have a brain tumor because I started to smell things that weren't real. So, and that's what often a brain tumor manifests as, people having smells that form that aren't actually there, but it's the brain being impacted in a certain way. Okay. And I would sit there and I'd say, oh my goodness, someone is smoking. I'm getting an asthma attack. I can't breathe. I can smell someone smoking. And beloved would say, there is no cigarette smoke anywhere. And this would carry on. I'd be on my puffer and using it and not really be helped with the puffer at all with this process of smelling cigarette smoke. And it wasn't very clear then that it was actually spirit manifesting itself as, you know, I didn't know then I was clairsent. And which means that you can smell spirit. And so my grandmother then presented herself one day as smelling this unusual combination of cigarette smoke, like a 1940s waxy lipstick. So I don't know if you remember your grandmother's lipstick, but it had a certain oily odor to it. And as well as mothballs. Now, you cannot make that smell up, that combination, but that immediately brought me right back into my grandmother's presence. And so I started practicing becoming aware of what images and thoughts were coming through at that moment in time. And I wasn't consciously aware. We come from our own map of the world, our own perception of how we experience the world. And I just assumed up until that moment in time that everybody experienced life when you were having a conversation with someone, having a running movie to the left. And that's what I see as just like a running movie of things. And I didn't realize that other people didn't have that experience. Now I understand that to be part of a gift when you're tapping into your clairaudience, your clairsentience, your clairvoyance. So it's been a wonderful journey, and certainly my grandmother created the bridge between me not believing to then beginning to believe because I loved her so much. And when they pass over in spirit, it's kind of like they have your photo album of your emotions and your beliefs and your experiences And so that's the way that, that it can come through and show you things, because they've got your own little photo album to use your imprints on. And so it's no longer my grandmother who comes through, because I guess, you know, she's passed me over to something that has more experience or more insight and understanding. And the reason why I share this with this story all with you today is that this discovery of this world helped me substantially cope through that trauma and grief of dealing with your child who ostensibly had metastatic cancer, which means that it's like a cannonball that can just blow cannons into other areas of the body. And so it gave me that ability to have this unwavering faith to be able to get through things and to find purpose and meaning and understanding into why we were going through these experiences. Unbeknownst to me, this was forming the foundation of information and experience that I would then later draw upon when I then had my own cancer diagnosis.
That's a biggie, isn't it? So you had some really big milestones in your life, and obviously the frightening ones as well as the good and the warm ones, and the smell of naphthalene flakes. So that's a strong smell. We all know mothballs. Naphthalene is something you probably couldn't replicate anywhere or anyhow. And if Beloved says he can't smell it and you're smelling it, then there is something obviously there that's that you're picking up. And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? But you said that your son's cancer was metastatic.
Metastatic,
static,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Metastasized.
Yes.
I can never say that.
Mm. It's a tongue twister for sure.
It is. And what about your cancer? Tell us what sort of cancer you had. You had breast cancer. So what sort of cancer did it present at? Can you tell us that story, how you found it?
So my story is, I say to people, I once had cancer for 2 weeks, and I wholeheartedly believe that I need to have that mindset around it. Mm. So from the time of discovery and diagnosis to the time that both breasts were removed was exactly 2 weeks. Now, it was an interesting form. It's called invasive lobular carcinoma. And this is a cancer predominantly not for women, but discovered in women who are in their late 60s and who are or have been using hormone replacement therapy. Now, when I was diagnosed, I was 41 and I did not fit into that category. So it's a rare form of cancer for my age group. Saying that, within 2 months, someone I knew got diagnosed with the same one, and within 6 months, another lady I knew, all of us around the same age. So perhaps not as rare as it says in the textbooks, but the curiosity around this cancer is that it doesn't have the glue that holds the cancer cells together. That's called e-cadherin. So if you don't have glue that holds cancer cells together, it can't form a tumor that presents as a lump. It spreads rather like a spider's web. So women traditionally are taught to look for lumps as opposed to look for spider's webs. So when I speak to women about doing their breast examination, I encourage them to really spice it up, to start taking it out of the bedroom, start doing it bending over, start doing it in front of the mirror, start doing it in the shower, and start being a voyeur in your own life and start keeping visual documentation of your breasts, because we don't appreciate, as we're aging, things are changing on a minuscule level.
Mm.
And certainly we have that one notion that when we are aging, we start to actually forgive half the things that are happening. Oh, that must just be age. Whereas some of the changes aren't necessarily age related, and they could be tumor or cancer related. So, you know, I encourage women to use, maybe, you know, for your left breast, you take your left hand, you take your thumb and your forefinger, and you spread the skin tightly, and then you use the other hand to run your hand gently over the skin. And what you're looking for are those spider webs, or what they refer to as thickening. And it's not going to present as a lump, because what we do know for sure is that in Australia, 1 in 7 women are diagnosed with breast cancer before the age of 85 every year. And these stats are quite phenomenal. What we also know for sure is that earlier diagnosis leads to better outcomes. So, you know, if you find something really early in the piece, you know, you can find it before it starts to spread to lymph nodes. And once it's spread to lymph nodes, it is considered to be metastatic.
Yeah. Mm. And the interesting thing there is with the breast checks that we're told about, as you said, no one, I haven't heard of that one before. And I've had 2 lumps removed, both sides. And fortunately, my outcome was very fortunately, very good. But I haven't heard that before. So it is interesting, as we were talking today, Tara and I, earlier this morning, we were talking about the different things that when you speak to people, you'll learn something different from every person that you speak to. And so there you go. And if you are a male and or a female, you are able to get breast cancer, and that is probably something that you do need to follow up with and just check. So you're looking for the spider veins, which are like a thickening, you're saying.
I would call them spider webs.
Spider webs.
Spider webs.
Not veins.
No.
No.
And I guess, you know, in Australia, mm-hmm. and we are covered by the government doing mammograms. Mm. And, you know, a lot of women, what they don't appreciate is that you need to ask when you have your mammogram, does it say I have dense breast tissue?
Yeah.
Because if you do have dense breast tissue, it is like finding a needle in a haystack or a needle in a snowstorm. When you have dense breast tissue, women wear that label like a badge of honor, thinking it means that they've got nice, perky breasts.
No.
In reality, what it means is that your breast tissue is really difficult to read. So a mammogram often fails women who have dense breast tissue. Mammograms fail women who have breast cancers without the e-cadherin that spread as a spider's web. Mm. And mammograms fail women who have a tumour up against the ribcage. So what do you do with this information? Well, first of all, I would encourage you to start asking your medical practitioners what other testing is available for me. So, you know, dense breast tissue, often an ultrasound will work better. But what really works well and picks up through dense breast tissue, picks up ones that are, you know, present as a spider's web, what picks up ones that are up against the ribcage wall is an MRI with contrast. Now, certainly in Australia, they're not covered by Medicare or our private health fund, and you are out of pocket by a fair amount. But I would suggest to people that if you are concerned, if you have breast cancer issues within your own family, that you might ask, instead of a birthday gift from your friends, you sort of say, look, this is what I'm planning this year. How about you contribute to this fund? Because this is a really important health check that I'd like to have. And this would be a really valuable gift. In fact, the gift of life. Yeah,
absolutely. It's interesting that you said that, because when I discovered that I had something abnormal on both my breasts, they only picked up one. So whoever was looking at it down the track, so obviously goes through a few eyes, decided that I had to go back in and have another check for the other side, and then I had to have the MRI as to pick, and they found 2. And I had what they called dense, very dense tissue, and I was also on HRT. And I had spoken to my specialist about, you know, HRT being the doctor's daughter. I wanted to know the good, bad, the ugly. And I was told that it was okay. HRT was safe, that there had been a lot of misinformation about HRT, but it was safe. After I had my lumps removed on both sides, the doctor said to me, you can continue with HRT if you so wish, because it actually helped us see these lumps, because the HRT brought them to the fore. So it brought them forward in the dense tissue so they were able to see them. And so I actually realised that if I hadn't have taken the HRT, who knows where I would be right now, and who knows what those lumps would have developed into. So they're certainly in their early phase. So it is interesting, isn't it? It's the MRI is the thing, both male and female, and we're certainly seeing younger and younger and younger people with breast cancer.
So just is sort of recapping on the positioning around HRT, you know, for some breast cancers, HRT actually drives the growth of that. Yeah. So, you know, in my case, you know, mine is estrogen and progesterone positive, which means that any form of additional hormones into my body will actually encourage the growth of that cancer. Mine did metastasize to my lymph nodes. And so, you know, there is always that careful watching of, you know, where it might land up. However, you know, when we talk about estrogen, one of the biggest factors in breast cancer recurrence in women is to start looking at, you know, chemotherapy robs your body of estrogen and puts you into menopause. And menopause, of course, then means that you start putting on fat cells in places that you really rather not. And but fat cells actually store estrogen. So, you know, losing weight is in your favor. You know, and that's one of the things is always watching the weight on the scale now so that I'm not growing further fat cells to store estrogen, because any estrogen storage within the body can actually be disruptive the future recurrence. Yeah.
So is there a test for how much estrogen you have in the body and where it's at a critical level?
Look, I'm not entirely sure, Tracy, because, you know, what I really did discover through my personal journey is that no two cancers are really exactly the same. You know, you have all these other factors in place and, you know, they might be falling under the same categories, but each person is, in general, you know, affected differently. So for me, what I did was, and I had no idea that this was even available until I started researching, because the oncologist did not make me aware that this test was available. But once I got diagnosed and I had a bit of that tumor pathology, I could then do a test called it's genomic testing. And it was testing the tumor cells to see in my body what the future recurrence was going to be and whether that chemotherapy regime would actually be beneficial for me. And, you know, that's once again a test. It's becoming a little bit more prevalent, and certainly, you know, they're making it cheaper and cheaper as time goes on, as more people ask and request it. But, you know, one of the reasons why the oncologist didn't want me to do the testing was because she said, well, what if this comes back and says you don't need chemotherapy? And in my opinion, that's the answer that I was actually looking for. Because, you know, why do chemotherapy if you don't need it? If you don't need to do a systemic poisoning of your entire body, surely you're wanting science to support whether you do it or not, as opposed to, you know, just an oncologist's opinion. And in my case, you know, the oncologist was pretty much my age with children. And so she was coming to the process with her own fears, because she could see me in herself in my position.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, I found that quite personally disturbing.
So there we go. As with medicine, there's lots and lots of different elements, aren't there, and different opinions. And obviously we always know that if you're not happy, then you always go for another opinion. And it might be two or three opinions until you feel that you have done the research and you have got, you're armed with all the knowledge that you need to make your decision. Yeah.
I do think, Tracy, that whenever you are met with a point in your life where you have really difficult decisions to make, that the more you know yourself at that point in time, the better your outcome will be, because you can be your own advocate and you can be the person who actually supports you, knows yourself enough to say, actually, that regime is not going to work for me and my personality and who I am. And, you know, I'm more than just this moment in time. I'm looking for, and in my case, I'm looking for quality of life instead of quantity of life. Whereas, you know, when people are met with a diagnosis, some people would then say, okay, I'm looking for quantity of life as opposed to quality of life. So, you know, the more you know yourself, the more you can make decisions that are inherently right for your soul.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, isn't it, that you've raised there, that perhaps people don't even think about. So wherever you are, you could be driving along the highway or sitting in your lounge room, bedroom, bathroom. Think about that. Think about, have you thought about, number one, have you ever thought about where and how you want to be buried? I know we've had those conversations with our parents, and I'm glad we did, because then we were able to honour their wishes to the best of our ability. But taking that back a step, dial it back a step, and what sort of life do you want to have? We all want to have a great long life, and some will and some won't. But if we do have that choice, what would you like? And it's a good question to ask ourselves. Do you want quantity or do we want quality?
And, you know, the interesting aspect is that while you're sitting there and mulling that over, you don't always know exactly how you're going to react at that point in time. So, you know, with my own belief system, and I had done my raw food chef course beforehand, and I was really about, you know, my body is my temple. You know, my very first case was, I will not be doing chemotherapy. This is not part of the way I want to live my life. I don't, you know, don't want to go down that track at all. In fact, as my beloved said, you know, they don't actually discuss a lot of the side effects of chemotherapy. They will often hand it over to you in a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And what they fail to mention in that piece of paper is one of the side effects of chemotherapy is death. And that's never put out, because people are losing their body's immune system and the ability to fight off infections and viruses when they have had chemotherapy. So this is when I drew upon my spirituality, and I spent a lot of time going into deep meditation and asking and inquiring about my steps forward in the process and how I was going to move forward. And, you know, I had a very strong opinion not to do chemotherapy. And the answer came back, you know, Taryn, you have been preparing many lifetimes for this moment, and you will effect far greater change if you go through this as a process. And my question, you know, as I'm crying and sort of saying, but I my body is my temple, and you, I've always understood that I need to keep it clean and pure and this beautiful conduit for working with other people so I can bring that energy through. And, you know, the answer was very loud and clear. You are so much greater than this physical form. So, you know, it really did crash my world doing chemotherapy. In fact, you know, my beloved said, you know, I can't believe you're doing this, Taryn. This is not for you, because he knows me so well. And even to this day, he often remarks at how amazingly I sailed through chemotherapy. But, you know, I did use that. I went, I started in the private system, wasn't so enamored, went into the public system. And so you'd sit in this huge oncology ward, but I would arrive in, you know, colorful Camilla caftans and, you know, my wig and, you know, my Tibetan bowls. And they said you could only have two people with you, and I'd have an entourage of five people, and we'd have a picnic inside. Well, you know, and I would bless the chemotherapy, and I'd run Reiki energy through it. And I would believe that, you know, first do no harm. And so I do believe that, you know, I had quite a good outcome, although, you know, chemotherapy does have long-term effects that I am working on. But I do believe that I could affect a far greater change, because I brought a lot of light and brightness and comedy to, you know, that oncology unit in the process. Yeah. I was desperate not to lose my hair. I can honestly tell you that that is probably one of the most traumatic experiences through chemotherapy, is losing your hair. In Townsville, it's really beastly hot. And, you know, being bald, I had no idea that we perspired so much through our head. And with no hair to wick away the moisture, it was a very wet spot. Certainly with chemotherapy, it wrecks and ruins your circulatory system, or the chemotherapy that I did. And so I had a layer of fluid buildup around my head. I could stick my finger into my scalp and it would sink in about 1 centimeter. It was incredibly painful to lie down on a pillow at night and sleep on this really extended, tight, taut skin filled with, you know, fluid. So, you know, there's a lot of aspects of chemotherapy that were less than enjoyable, but I do believe that through the process of doing chemo, I am able to speak to other women from a place of deep compassion and empathy because I have gone through that experience. Whereas if I hadn't have done chemo, you know, there was every chance that if I was speaking about this process, that I would be speaking at it from a place of that could be perceived as judgment on those who have done chemo. But there is no right or wrong way as a blanket form. It is very individual.
So tell me, you have a daughter and 2 sons. So has your daughter had the tests to see if she is susceptible to breast cancer?
So the interesting thing there, the short answer is no. Breast cancer history is considered as, you know, being a direct relation to someone if to be considered that you have a family risk factor. You know, at the time, I didn't have a lot of information about grandparents' medical history. And, you know, they asked if there was breast cancer history in the family. And I mentioned that my grandfather's 2 half-sisters had both died, you know, had very large breasts and had passed away with breast cancer. It is only, so it was considered too far removed because it wasn't a direct line. So it's only been in the last fortnight that I have spoken to an aunt in England and was inquiring about my grandmother's passing and her medical history. And she then made mention that my grandmother had in fact been diagnosed with breast cancer in her 40s and not a single family member has, you know, had failed. Partly because in those days, it was very private. She literally just went away to a hospital to have some surgery on her breasts. And so the assumption is that because in those days, certainly there was no, you know, breast enlargement.
Or reduction.
And so this has somewhat changed my, I guess, that understanding of whether my children sit at a risk for it. So, you know, I do have my lead up, you know, my check that comes around every 6 months and I will be discussing it then to find out with this new information that comes to light. But certainly when people are speaking to family members, it's really hard to get that information about medical history of family members because their way of looking at it was an incredibly private thing to talk about, and most people of that age were quite stoic about it.
It's interesting you said that because I got asked the same question. I think it's a mandatory question to ask. And my great aunt passed away from breast cancer, but I was told the same thing, that she was too far removed. But they were interested to know if I had any Jewish connection. Did you get asked that question?
I can't remember because, but my grandmother had Jewish blood in her. And I think that they have a far higher rate of
risk. It's interesting you say that because I've just done my DNA and I'm waiting to see it, when it comes back. So to have a look at the past, and I love history. So it will be interesting to see if there's anything like that in there. And it's the wonder, isn't it, of the world and history and times gone past. And it's the key. It's a key to a lot of things, including the medical world, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I would be encouraging people to keep asking questions and do it delicately enough that, you know, your family, older family members feel safe enough to impart the information.
It's a hard one because I know, you know, some of those people in those eras didn't even get dressed in front of their husbands, those women. they had their own room to get dressed in. Into and obviously even my mother's just turned 90, and so she's quite horrified when she sees girls in short shorts or baring their chest, etc., or short hair, and there's a whole range of things that she's that's her standard in her life, and it's interesting. So tell me, if you could do your time again, it through the journey of surviving and thriving through cancer, what would you do differently?
Oh, Tracy, you know, this is a an interesting question, because I guess when it's considered as a metastatic cancer because it has spread, you are met with, you know, what happens the next time I discover something else. And, you know, I feel, you know, quite different this time. I think because I have gone through the process of chemotherapy, I am not as open to doing it a second time round. I do believe that that is something which I can only tell you whether I'll do it or not if I'm met with that prognosis at the time. But what would I do differently? I would certainly, prior to my surgery, my mastectomy, I would have really worked hard at getting what I call a bioimpedance measure. So what that does, it's a special machine. In Australia, the machines are worth about $15,000. I would go and get my measures done, because, and I would also go and get some brain scans done as well. Firstly, the bioimpedance measures, the reason why you would do that is that when you take lymph nodes out of your body, you are then considered as having an impaired lymphatic system. I have since gone on to develop lymphedema, which is a lifelong disability. It's a harrowing journey. I have a large amount of discomfort and pain. And each and every day I wake up and make a decision in my head that today is the day I'm not going to give up, that today is the day I'm going to keep moving forward, and I choose to be more, you know, happier about it than sad about it. And it's a conscious choosing. The lymphedema has been more difficult than the cancer diagnosis and the chemotherapy combined. So I would get my bioimpedance measures done, because that, what it does is it measures how your lymphatic system is working prior to the surgery. They do it shortly after the surgery, and then I think about a month after. And this gives a really great indicator to your risk in developing this lymphedema in within the next 12 months. So without having those measures in place, you know, you're flying by the seat of your pants. Certainly we did not have this piece of equipment in Townsville. Once I was diagnosed with lymphedema, I then managed to get some funding and get a machine donated to our local hospital. So we do have the only machine north of Brisbane to do this. Oh. And I'm very proud of that achievement because I do feel it's a proactive way of dealing with this as opposed to reactive, because by the time your limb starts showing up as a greater measurement in circumference, it's already done the damage. By the time that your arm is bigger on the outside and someone can say, yes, you have lymphedema, you're already doing damage on a cellular level. So I would do that differently. Yeah. And I would also do some brain scans prior to chemotherapy, because after chemotherapy, I had cognition changes and I feel that I have, you know, facial recognition, memory loss for names. There are things that I can't map and measure because I still perform daily tasks at what is considered a really high level. And when I have gone to see a neurologist and a psychiatrist and a psychologist to say there's something wrong, in fact, I told them I had a traumatic brain injury, I wanted more testing. And one of the difficulties is that I can't do a contrastive analysis from before to afterwards. And the disappointing thing is that because I have, you know, I can still speak and I can do other things, they just, I'm not going to fall low enough for them to actually say, yes, this happens. So if people are knowingly going into chemotherapy, one of the reasons why they don't actually talk about that as a side effect is because they haven't done the measurements beforehand and they can't do that contrastive analysis. Cognition, incidentally, estrogen is like a drug to the brain.
Yes.
So women love estrogen.
Yes,
it
do.
Helps them think and be smart and funny and quick. And when you do chemotherapy, you're robbing the body of estrogen. And so therefore you are robbing your brain of the very essence that makes you feel like you can do things. And I really struggle with that.
That's really interesting because you would have to have those tests done prior to your chemo, and you can't do it once you've had the chemo, the damage is done.
Well, you could do it, but then the significance and the meaning of the results, they've got nothing to compare it against.
Yeah.
So therefore you can't prove that there's been a significant change. You can only say, I feel like this has changed. Mm. And of course, you know, in the world of science, feelings don't work, measurements do. And so I don't have any of that to work with to say this supports me. I can just talk about how I feel.
That's a really interesting, interesting piece of information, a huge chunk of information, I'd be saying. So if you're listening and you know a friend who is going through breast cancer, whether it be male or female, adult or child, then please pass on that information, because as much information as possible, the more we're informed, the better off we are. Now I'm looking at the clock, as we always are looking at the clock in life, aren't we? And you can't slow it down. But tell me, Charon, your journey was to take you to a path where you help others. So tell us a little bit about that. And that's your business now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I was actually helping women and men before this all happened.
Yes.
You know, my little tagline, as I say to people, you know, I'm a raw honey hawker, I'm an urban farmer, I am a gratitude junkie, a spiritual mentor, I, you know, do NLP and hypnotherapy, and I really enjoy working with people. And of course, I'm a spiritual mentor. And so, you know, I have had a long time in working with all my health issues. And so it hasn't really given a huge scope for inviting people into the space to be able to work with them. Mm. But I have started doing, you know, large group things. And it's been so much fun connecting back with people, and it's something which I thoroughly enjoy. And I love the spiritual newbies. I love taking people from a space where they don't understand how to talk to spirit or hear spirit, and I love taking them in the process and getting them so that they can start living their life according to what's for their highest good. And so when you're operating from that realm, you know, I can walk down the grocery aisle and I can look at a block of chocolate and I'll say to my spirit guide, so shall I have this bar of chocolate?
Yes.
And the answer will be yes, because when we come into this realm, we have free will. But if I take it up a notch and I change the quality of my question and I will say, you know, is this bar of chocolate in my highest good? The answer is invariably no. So I tend to conduct my life from that space now. You know, before I say yes to something, I check in, shall I do this? And then I ask the next question, is it in my highest good? And so sometimes from an ego level, we think that we know everything.
Yeah.
And so we'll instantly say, oh, this is what we're going to do. And it's a curiosity discovering that sometimes there's a much bigger picture that we might be missing if we're operating from the level of ego.
That's interesting. And right now we are in Taryn's studio and it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful here. And there's an outside shower, which I enjoyed in the early hours this morning. It was just stunning with the backdrop of Castle Hill. And I slept here last night, so it was fabulous. Actually, it's a lovely feeling here. And if people want to contact you, tell us how they find you.
Okay, I'm on Facebook. You can add me as a friend, Taryn Clare, or you can join my business page, Taryn Clare Lanoux. I have many Facebook groups that support people to live a high vibrational life, because I do believe from that high frequency and high vibration, it's easier to manifest.
Yes.
Because what you put out comes back to you. So that's Lanoux Tribe or Women Raising Vibration. I'm on Instagram under Taryn Clare. Else, my website, taryncleareleneux.com.
Okay, so that's Taryn, T-A-R-Y-N, Clare, C-L-A-R-E. L-E-N-U-R-E, Lenu, that's French.
French.
L-E-N-U, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So if you're looking to connect with beautiful Taryn here, then you can find her on the social media under her name and her tribe, which is Lenu. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tracy. This has been extraordinary fun, and I have loved sharing and imparting all that I have learned along the way. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
It's my pleasure. And to our listeners today, thank you for coming and listening to us for another 60 minutes on our Thursday in Australia, in the sunny, very warm and humid Townsville in North Queensland. I'd like to wish you a wonderful weekend, as it's coming up soon for us anyway, and I think my weekend starts straight after this show. And I wish you all the very best. Wherever you are, please do check your breasts and make sure that you look for the spidery thickening. It's not spider webs, it's the spidery thickening. Make sure you do it, and make sure you tell all your friends to do it too. Won't take very long, a couple of seconds, but do it. And you might have to tip yourself upside down and check to see how you're drooping for the women, and for the men, wouldn't hurt to do that as well, because you're looking at the mass under the skin to see what's happening. And if you're in doubt, go and have it checked out straight away. Don't leave it and leave and think you'll be okay, because it may not be, and we don't want that in our lives. So thank you so much to our listeners. Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of Tracy Tully Talks on bbsradio.com. If you would like to contact me via my website, it's www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. No ease in any of that. So I wish you all the very best. Have a wonderful weekend. And I will speak to you this time next Thursday here in Australia, on whatever day you are over there. And all the best. All the best from me.
And all the best from me too. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence, and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.